And we'd like to invite forward our guest, Dennis Rocliffe, from the First UU Church of Oakland, who will tell us about some of his experiences. Come on up. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mighty good attendance for a summer service. I don't know where you fit everybody when they all come back from vacation. Good morning. As Glenn said, I'm Dennis Rocliffe, and I'm here from the First Unitarian Church of Oakland, where I'm a member of 22 years standing. I'm grateful to Heidi Green for inviting me here today to share some reflections on what it has meant for our congregation to welcome and support a minister of color for the past 6 years, and to suggest what might work best as you start down the same path. I offer greetings and congratulations from the Oakland Church. Congratulations for taking this exciting step towards broadening your collective understanding, growing the church, and engaging more fully with your wider community. I join you in welcoming Reverend Dr. Maria Cristina Vlasidis Bergoa as your church's new minister. In preparing my remarks, I included comments and ideas I gathered from several longtime Oakland Church members. Our reflections are offered with great hope for what lies ahead for the Star King UU Church of Hayward. As one longtime church leader said, before the First Unitarian Church of Oakland welcomed our current African American minister, the Reverend Jacqueline Duhart, or Pastor Jacqueline, as she prefers to be called, we were preparing for Pastor Jacqueline to come for a long time. Her call reflects our deep and long-held yearnings for diversity in our congregation and our denomination, for challenging white supremacy within our congregation and denomination, for wanting leadership in our quest for inclusivity, for broadening the parameters and methods of worship, and for active engagement and relationship with someone with a different background and perspective than that of many UU white ministers. We had done work within ourselves and had voiced such aspirations for a long time. I expect these words may sound familiar to you at this moment. With that introduction, I'll touch on three areas that may help your new minister feel welcome and supported, as ours has, and then point out a couple of possible activities that could help when you're a little further along. The first is the need to trust your minister as much and as often as you possibly can. In this case, go right past the typical UU tendency to resist authority. Questioning is fine, but don't let it interfere with being fully engaged and involved. Reverend Maria Cristina may encourage you to engage in worship and in church life in new ways, and a truly welcoming congregation will not resist these invitations. Come to church with an open heart and an open mind, and be ready to be led in some ways that will be both familiar and different for you. Respect the minister's authority. She has already earned it. Along those same lines, should you become concerned about who takes care of the minister, listen to her about this and believe what she tells you. After Pastor Jacqueline began taking on more responsibility and a more central role in the church, some people wondered if she was perhaps under too much stress. Some members felt that they needed to take care of her. So for about a year, Pastor Jacqueline regularly gave our congregation feedback that we were being too protective of her and that we were assuming she needed more support than was actually true. She told us the various ways she was getting support and was taking care of herself. She emphasized that we didn't need to take care of her in that way. I suggest you believe what your minister tells you and act accordingly. It looks to me like Reverend Maria Cristina is a forthright person and will ask for the help she really needs. Before long, you will need to form a committee on ministry, but that will be the job of just a few individuals. The third area is the support the minister feels from the anti-racism work being done in and by the church. In Oakland, our anti-racism work as a whole church really began in earnest about 15 years ago in 2002. Today, with some fluctuations and interruptions, the Oakland Church has three separate but overlapping groups. The deliberately balanced multiracial group called Journey Towards Wholeness. Actually, the full name is the Journey Toward Wholeness Transformation Team. The white anti-racism allies group called Allies for Racial Equity, and the People of Color Caucus. As a member of two of these groups, I can attest that we've done some of it well, and that we have stumbled along the path in some instances, too. That will happen when a church pushes itself in new directions. Despite the Oakland Church having had a few ministers of color in intern and support roles in the past, we still had lots to learn. Our coming to terms with Pastor Jacqueline's ministry has taken special efforts for all of us to get on board with the work this wonderful minister has called us to do, directly or indirectly. We have had to teach each other, discuss, learn, make mistakes, apologize, correct ourselves, and keep working on it to get to where we are today. As may be the case here in Hayward, in the Oakland Church, some of us are further along the path towards true anti-racism and multiculturalism than others. How do we address that disparity? I strongly encourage anyone who is not involved in this church's anti-racism multicultural alliance group to check it out. It's some of the most meaningful work that happens within the church. So long as we have kept ourselves engaged in the work our groups do, in learning through Jubilee training and Beloved Conversations sessions, Pastor Jacqueline feels supported. She is not a regular leader in our anti-racism work, but it's clear that it's important to her that we keep on doing it. We have met with her on certain issues, but for the most part, we do our own work without her, just checking in about plans and decisions that affect the church. The level of risk rises if we take our eye off the ball and fail to do that work, or if the meetings seem closed and don't draw in new people. One concern is that people can say quite offensive things without meaning to. We need to draw everyone into increasing levels of awareness of themselves and how best to relate to each other. One rather enlightened member said, "I have heard from people of color that it is hard to see how rough white people can be on each other, and that witnessing that is intimidating and doesn't make them feel safer around us. So that's a reminder that working against racism isn't about being harsh with each other, but pulling each other in close and giving each other a hand where we're struggling." What she's saying is about showing love and care. Love is how the work of the church carries us. It's the juice the church runs on. It's what leads us to stay engaged when it would be easier not to. Love is what leads us to call and welcome a new minister with well-justified hope and faith, even knowing that nothing lasts forever, and that here in the real world, the love coin has another side, which is suffering. Suffering is unavoidable in this pursuit, as in life itself. We go ahead anyway. We've got light, meaningful work to do, including that of spreading our message of love and care. I'll close by mentioning a couple of anti-oppression tools we use in meetings, tools that were introduced about 5 years ago by a black member of the Board of Trustees, drawing on her own wealth of knowledge and resources in anti-oppression work. We routinely use these couple of tools to share in the moment, help us get to know each other better and address potential problems right after they surface. One of these tools is process monitoring. Is that familiar to anybody? Okay. It's the practice of having someone simply observe what is happening in our meeting interactions to check on the power dynamics at work in hopes of reducing gender and racial dominance and subjugation or anything else that's impeding equanimity. Is the discussion being dominated by one person or group of people to the exclusion of others? How are decisions made? Does everyone participate? What isn't being said? The monitor takes notes and then gives their observations and invites others in the room to do the same. The other tool is a multicultural exercise in which someone shares an element of their ethnic, family, or national origin, and others are invited to respond in similar fashion on the same topic. It's meant to help with community building, raise our levels of awareness, and increase familiarity with respect to some important things we would not otherwise know about each other. I'll give you a short anecdote on what happened at one board meeting. The person leading the multicultural exercise that night chose the topic of Thanksgiving. She talked about her family's custom of gathering for the occasion and the ways they celebrate the holiday. Then, one at a time, the other 8 or 9 board members present spoke, and each in turn used the terms traditional or normal in briefly summarizing their Thanksgiving food and rituals. As it happened, Pastor Jacqueline, who sits at the table with the elected board members, was the last one in the church to speak. When her turn came, she said, "You white people, what's traditional for you is not so for me. I don't really know what you're talking about. Growing up, my family was poor, and we might have had an extra food item for dinner that day, but overall, we didn't do anything special for Thanksgiving. We didn't have anything to celebrate. It wasn't a special occasion at my house." As I recall, most everyone there was shocked into silence. I can't speak for the others, but I felt my heart breaking and my spirit rising at the same time. I know some people who live near me haven't the means nor the inclination to celebrate the same holidays that I do or in the same ways. I've seen that side of the city, but the honesty of that moment and the stark contrast provided were revelations nonetheless. But in a few moments, we went back to breathing normally. The person who had initiated the topic thanked everyone for participating, and they moved on to the next item on the agenda. We all have lots to learn. May we be open to it, pay attention, and make the most of our newfound understandings. And may you all sustain a long, open-hearted, and healthy tenure with Reverend Maria Cristina Lacidis Bergoa in her new church home.
Thank you, Dennis. That was really beautiful. Good morning again. I'm the Reverend they've been talking about. When I was invited to the planning meeting for the service, it just dawned on me that it would be awkward to be invited to be in the service and to hear my name and to be talked about in the third person. So I said, I might as well speak. I'm going to be right there. So here I am. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your testimony and the care that you put into crafting your narrative. So I just want to say that my first official service will take place September 4th. And on that day, you're invited to bring water because we're going to do the water communion that day. So I hope to see everyone there. So what is so special about being a minister of color? What does that even mean? And can a light-skinned person like me call themselves a person of color? don't we usually associate color with brown or black? And shouldn't we be colorblind and see everyone as the same? When I first immigrated to the United States from Chile, I was called alien, refugee, minority, Hispanic, and the derogatory spick. I went to a school where there was a clear division among blacks, whites, and Puerto Ricans. Back home in my country, the divisions were mostly between indigenous peoples and city folk who denied their indigenous roots. We were taught that to be Indian, quote unquote, was uncultured, backwards, and that we needed to rapidly assimilate and learn new modern ways. That meant cutting my hair, that at that time was down to my knees. That meant not wearing traditional clothing, and it meant suppressing our spiritual rituals that went according to nature and in honor of Mother Earth, in exchange for a Christian school and a Catholic education. As a result, I grew up without being seen as my whole self. We were told that because of our light skin and because we spoke Spanish so well, we could pass, as if that were a good thing. I learned that culture meant European. And I learned that beautiful meant nothing like me. So when I came to the United States and I decided to jump double dutch with Karen, who happened to be black, to sit and have lunch with Aaron, who was white, and to play with Madeline, who was Puerto Rican, I had no idea I would get into so much trouble. I broke all the rules in the playground, in the cafeteria, and on the bus. And I paid for it by being beat up and harassed and be told, you have to pick a side. Well, I refused. I still refused. And today the only side is the side of love for me. It wasn't until I joined the movement in solidarity with people living with HIV and AIDS in New York City as a community advocate that I learned the term person of color, people of color, and the term Latina, because at that time in New York City they had devised the census forms and they were calling us Hispanic. And I didn't know until then that Hispanic meant that I was a colonized person, that I came from Spain, which is the country that colonized my country. What a thing. What a label. What a category to impose on people. But I was calling myself that because that was the official label and the box that you had to check on every form that you saw. So that movement gave me the liberation from that label and offered me an alternative to call myself Latin American or Latina, which was more empowering, which reflected that I was a member of this whole continent, right? And I was not just a colonized person. So it was politically empowering to call myself a person of color and find solidarity and also offer solidarity to people who are African American, Asians, Latin American, from the Caribbean, and suddenly that label minority didn't apply to me, and I just shed it like an old skin, and I adopted being a person of color and being Latina as my empowering tools of liberation and of asserting pride in my cultural roots. Identifying as a person of color, I am not forced to describe myself in the negative of not white. Instead, it's a positive thing for me. It reminds me that color can mean light, medium, or dark. It also means that as a light-skinned Latina, I have a responsibility to check my own light-skinned privilege. Today, I proudly identify as a person of color, as a Latina, as indigenous, as an immigrant, as a lesbian, as queer, working class, and multicultural. What a mouthful. I dwell on the borderlands of language, of gender, and economic status. I was baptized in the Greek Orthodox Church. I made my first communion in the Catholic Church. I learned to sing soulful church music and speak in tongues in the Pentecostal Church. I attended the Episcopal Church in New York City, and I include Buddhist meditation in my daily spiritual practice. I am devoted to Mary, to Our Lady of Guadalupe, and the saints. I am a daughter of Yemaya in the Yoruba tradition, and I am guided by my indigenous Chilean religious traditions of honoring Mother Earth and the ancestors. I chose to become a Unitarian Universalist because I can be all those beautiful things. It says chaplain. As your minister, my first priority is your spiritual health. It is my job to provide pastoral care to individuals and to guide this community on its journey towards wholeness and to move forward with you, supporting your efforts to make real your social justice aspirations. We have entered into a holy covenant that shapes our relationship as sacred. In this relationship, trust, respect, compassion, forgiveness, and right relationship are essential. The fact that I identify as a person of color is a source of pride and joy for me. Yet it alone does not define me. I am so much more than that, and you will hear me talk a lot about intersectionality, a lot. Being a person of color and all the other identifiers that I named before gives me a particular world perspective. It speaks to my particular social location and always offers me a lesson in cultural humility and compassion for myself and for others. I am glad that as a society, we are moving away from terms such as melting pot or color blindness and towards intersectionality and multiculturalism. I don't want to melt away my cultural heritage and traditions, and I want to be seen as a whole person, not just the parts that are comfortable to see. I want us to be aware of our differences so that we can together celebrate our diversity and cultural roots. And yes, all of you all have cultural roots. Amen?
Amen.
All right. So what do I need as your minister who happens to be a proud person of color? I always begin with gratitude. I hope you see me as a gift and not as a burden. Trust. I hope that you will open your hearts to me as I open my hearts to you. And trust that I have your best interest at heart. Vulnerability. I hope that we will both take risks to speak the truth in love, to be real with each other. Compassion. I hope that you will be compassionate towards yourselves and towards me when we stumble and make mistakes. And we'll make lots of those, I can guarantee that. Accountability and forgiveness. I hope that we will make each other accountable when we are not in right relationship and that we will forgive ourselves and each other so that we can begin again in love. Generosity. I hope that we learn to replace scarcity mentality with abundance, that we practice generosity of spirit, and that we share the financial responsibility for keeping the doors open of this, your spiritual home. Thank you.